This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Now we move on to our bloggers roundtable. An unpopular war, increasing unemployment, and high gas prices, they all spell high disapproval ratings for President Bush. 71% of Americans polled think Bush is doing a poor job leading the country. Those numbers are among the highest in history since polls started in the 1930s. So how does he rank against other unpopular presidents? To answer that question and more, we have Danny Perry. He's editor-in-chief for They're All Ready at blogspot.com. He's joined by Desmond Burton of afronerd.com and Kim Platt. She blogs at askthisblackwoman.com. Hi, folks.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Danny, the president's numbers are even worse than Richard Nixon's were just prior to resigning from office. How do you think he rates in terms of his performance, not necessarily just the poll numbers, but how would you rate him in terms of performance?
Well, George Bush pretty much based the success of his presidency on the outcomes of the war in Iraq. And 5 years ago, he landed on the USS Abraham Lincoln and declared mission accomplished. And his approval ratings were very high at that time. But since then, the war has ground on. It's entering its sixth year. There have been more than 4,000 U.S. casualties with really no tangible benefit for the American economy. My kids' kids will be paying for this, and the vets who are returning from this war are not receiving the care they need or deserve. Many of them are ending up homeless, and the damage to the American economy overall is beginning to show up in the price of gas and food and everything else. So it's really no surprise that his ratings have reached this low point. But, you know, the good news is that his team has been searching for what his legacy is going to be. And I think they found it, that these are the lowest ratings in American history. And no president has reached this level ever. So I believe that speaks for itself.
Desmond, when you think about the president, I want your estimation of him, but also considering that he's what we call a lame duck president, that he's counting down to the end of a two-term presidency, does he even really need to care?
Well, I think he should care. I mean, if anything, he's in esteemed company. I say that facetiously with Harry S. Truman and Richard Nixon. I mean, if you can't outbeat, Watergate, that's it's hell to pay to a certain degree. History has a weird way of looking at these things, though. I'm thinking of Dr. King. Dr. King, in certain circles during the 60s, was considered a threat to national security. And even by McCain did not even vote for his holiday. And yet now, years later, he's an esteemed person. He's definitely a iconic figure. So who's to say, I mean, maybe 30, 40 years from now, maybe Bush knows something that we do not. I hope that's not the case. But again, history is kind of a weird thing. I guess my main problem with it is that what are the disparate elements that are attached to the Bush administration going into this presidential campaign? Will it be race versus McCain following a third Bush term? So I think we're in a weird place right now.
Kim, how do you think he stacks up, particularly for African Americans? What's happened to black folk? You know, there's the Clinton era was, you know, are you better off? And a lot of people by the end of the Clinton presidency said yes. Now people are feeling insecure. What has happened to black communities, you think?
Oh, I think things are certainly worse for black communities. But I think part of the Bush legacy will be what he's done for Africa in terms of the HIV and AIDS initiatives there. And that seems to be the one thing that people are talking about that he has really excelled at and will be what he's remembered for. And so I think that black people will look at that. And, you know, I certainly think he is the worst president ever in the history of America. But what he has done in terms of the initiatives is great.
I'm going to go back to you for a second, Desmond. What do you think he has done for or against Republicans and conservatives? Has he created a cycle where Republicans and conservatives will be facing huge challenges in the Senate, in Congress, and possibly even in the presidential race?
I think, if anything, he has solidified the neocon movement more so than ever. I think that, unfortunately, for the moderates, how can I put this? If anything, it seems as if he has engendered religion forever at this point in our populace, that we will not be able to go beyond religion and religiosity because of the Bush administration. So I think he's definitely laid out some challenges, but in some regards, he has also pretty much solidified that what it means to be on the far right.
I'm going to move on to another topic, still in politics. Last week, Reverend Wright went on a media tour. Senator Barack Obama formally disowned his former pastor. During this time, some of his big-name supporters were suspiciously silent. We didn't hear from Jesse Jackson, senior or junior. You have been blogging about this, Danny. What do you think?
Well, I saw Charles Rangel on CNN, and he said that basically it's disgraceful that he has to make any explanation for anything, referring to Obama, that this intrusion of the media and Republicans into the sacred relationship that worshipers have with their spiritual leaders, I think, is going back to Ahanas. And strangely enough, Charlie Rangel is a Hillary Clinton supporter. So Obama has plenty of big name supporters on his side, from the Ted Kennedys to John Kerry's and Robert Reich's to Bruce Springsteen and Chris Rock and Samuel Jackson, and the list is endless, but no one's really stepped forward to highlight the fact, the hypocrisy of this whole issue, or that it's simply a distraction from the real issue the real issues that should be being discussed as a part of this campaign, including the war and the
Why do you think that is? Why do you think we haven't heard more from his surrogates?
Well, they're treating this issue basically as if it's radioactive, and there's the impression that or the conviction that among some that the supporting Reverend Wright would lead to some segments of the populace going against Barack Obama or solidifying their opinions against Barack Obama, and others who think that not supporting Reverend Wright would distance supporters of the black church from Obama. So it could alienate one segment or the other of the voting populace. But I think that in the case of Obama's surrogates, they need to actually step out and highlight these issues so that Obama himself is not caught in a tit for tat over every issue that arises from this point forward. And we had put up a post a week or so ago that we called a denounce, reject, and repeat, and which basically stated that Obama is going to find himself in a denouncement loop where he will find himself sooner or later denouncing everything, and he cannot change the fundamental fact of who he is, and the accumulation of his life experiences is what has brought him to this point where he is a viable candidate for the presidency. So in that respect, he should not be the one responding to issues of this, to every issue of this sort, when he has supporters whose role it is or should be to take some of this flack and to actually lead the charge on some of these issues, including Reverend Wright.
Kim, we've seen in North Carolina, which has its primary tomorrow, some erosion in the support for Barack Obama, who, you know, a couple weeks ago was considered a shoe-in winner in North Carolina by some polls. Do you think that this is really going to hurt him in the long run, not just the controversy over Reverend Wright, but the question of whether or not his surrogates are rallying around him?
I don't think that it will hurt him in the long run. I think it will die down for the most part. I do think, however, many of his supporters aren't rallying behind him because they agree with Reverend Wright. I think what Reverend Wright had to say was completely valid. It's, I think if you're talking about a black experience and Barack is the composite of all his experiences and he is where he is today, I think the same goes, or same holds true for Reverend Wright. His black experience came out of the black church. He is who he is. His opinions about race and oppression stem from seeing it firsthand in the black community. And I do think if there is some erosion from black supporters, it's because Reverend Wright spoke the truth. Maybe not in the right way, but he spoke the truth.
Desmond, let me go to another issue related about Obama. Recently, Senator Obama criticized Hillary Clinton's harsh words for Iran's nuclear capabilities. Now, some pundits are saying that he's soft on foreign affairs. In fact, in the New York Sun, there was a whole article saying The Collapse of Obama, that was the title, and saying if anything is his Achilles heel, it's whether or not he is sufficiently strong in foreign policy. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's unfounded. I think in many ways, Hillary Clinton has not really been appropriately vetted out as far as her experience. She's no more experienced than he is, in my estimation. I think it's all about much to do about nothing. And if anything, we're being distracted from really finding out what he really thinks about the political issues abroad. He said something, if I recollect, about Pakistan and invading it. And then when Bush proceeded to do exactly what he had said weeks before, everyone stood back and said, wait a minute, this guy may know something about this. So I don't think that we're ever going to get that opportunity to really find out what he's talking about, because ultimately we're focused on Reverend Wright. And I just want to say something about Reverend Wright. I kind of have to disagree with Kim, because I think there's a book out by Jeremiah Kamara, called Holy Lockdown, Does the Church Limit Black Progress? And I think that this is perhaps the best example of that, where, in my estimation, this gentleman should have just laid low, as they say on the street, lay low in the cut. And he didn't do that. If you have a black person running for president trying to access power, he could have been, I guess, Obama's Jerry Falwell, in essence, if he had just laid back. But he spoke a truth. I don't know if it's the truth, but I have a problem with the whole Reverend Wright thing and how it's being put out there. He's literally like a Michael Jackson's black and white video. He's morphed into Malcolm X. So there's a problem.
All right. I want to reintroduce what we're doing. This is the Bloggers Roundtable on NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Today, our guests are Danny Perry, editor-in-chief for ThereAlready.blogspot.com, Desmond Burton of AfroNerd.com, and Kim Platt of AskThisBlackWoman.com. So I'm going to ask this black woman about TV host Barbara Walters. She's got a new memoir called Auditions, and she reveals...
She's had jungle fever.
Oh, you didn't go there.
Oh, but
she... She had an affair with Senator Edward Brooke. He was the first African-American to be popularly elected since Reconstruction into the U.S. Senate. Now, he was separated at the time of the alleged affair that took place in the mid-1970s. Apparently, not just a one-night stand, lasted for a while.
Okay.
He's still alive. He's not talking about this. He wrote a memoir not too long ago. Do you think this was appropriate for Barbara Walters to come out with this at this time?
I thought it was a bit odd. I think it's shocking that interracial relationships are still an issue. If he was separated, it's not really an affair, so to speak. I think it was a Barbara Walters moment of, you know, hey, I have a black friend, or I have black friends, and, you know, I'm down with the people. And
black friends with benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought it was completely shocking. And I don't know, it's maybe an attempt to stay relevant and believing that some tawdry interracial sex is the way to do it.
You know, our Tony Cox here at NPR actually asked the former senator if he could support a black man as a candidate for the White House.
If you're asking me, Tony, whether I would vote for Barack Obama because he's a black American, an African American, my answer would be no. He would have to be the best person that is being offered by either one of the two political parties.
Desmond, there was no talk of sex in the memoir by the former senator. He was straight talking politics. At this point in time, sex sells. Maybe it has always for, you know, millennia. But when you talk about writing a memoir, which of course it's your choice as an author, where do you draw the line? Where do you think people should draw the line in terms of what they reveal about other people's lives in the course of discussing their own?
I'm not sure. I mean, normally, from my understanding, that person who's writing the memoir, they would have to speak to the person that they're talking about and ultimately get a clearance for that. You would think that's the way it goes. But I think, I think kind of lends credence with comedian Paul Mooney's assertion that she may have had a liaison with Richard Pryor. So, you know, maybe she has a thing for the brothers. I don't know.
Alan Greenspan. So
I'm a little bit, I think it's just about selling books. And as Kim had mentioned, it's passe now. I think that she's a little too, like 25 years too late. No one really cares about it. It's a non-issue at this point.
All right, this one is a quick speed round. Pure fluff, but if you're my age, which happens to be Mariah Carey's age, you might be intrigued. She became the act with the second most number one singles in the rock era. That's more than Elvis, Michael Jackson, second only to the Beatles. Now, in her latest video for her hit album, actor Nick Cannon plays her love interest. He's 27, she's 38. Rumors say that they are married. Neither has commented, but in People magazine, Cannon's brother Gabriel said, "It's crazy, right? We're definitely happy. Well wishes." That sounds like a wedding to me. Danny, this may be an unfair question, but why do you think there's this whole, if not May, December, at least sort of May, August thing going on between men and women right now?
Oh, wow. Well, celebrity news of this type, I usually refer to Miss Grapevine's blog, but I guess the only thing I can really say is that if the rumors are true, then I hope they are happy and that they make this thing work. I guess there have been stranger pairings in the celebrity world, but this one is one that I just never would have seen coming at all from the perspective that I have a 10-year-old daughter who likes Nick Cannon's film work and work on Nickelodeon, and Mariah Carey basically started performing or hit the big time when I was in high school. So
before your daughter was even
born. Exactly. So all right. Well. So it's a bit strange in that respect. But hey, if they say like the or like they say, if you like it, I love it. So more power to them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We were speaking with Danny Perry, editor-in-chief for ThereAlready.blogspot.com. He was at Cake Mix Recording Studios in Dallas, Desmond Burton of AfroNerd.com, and Kim Platt. She blogs at AskThisBlackWoman.com. Desmond and Kim were both at our NPR studios in New York. Next on News and Notes, it's the economy, stupid. We talked to two voters in Indiana on the eve of the Democratic primary about jobs, 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 and how their state could shape the race for the White House. And as part of NPR's In Character series, NPR's Tony Cox profiles the king of the junkyard, Fred Sanford.